Welcome back to the Zergame Podcast. I'm Eric, your host, and on this podcast, I'm on a mission to help you with your tech sales career, but also help you build pipeline. Happy New Year 2024. So today, that's the first episode of 2024. On this first episode, we are going part two of the recap of 2023. So on the last episode, we started with part one, from the most downloaded episode, from episode number 10 to episode number 6. In today's episode, we're going to do the second part, so from episode number 5 to the number 1 episode of the year of 2023. Thank you so much for your support in 2023. If you enjoy the podcast, please comment on YouTube and send me a DM on LinkedIn to let me know what was your favorite episode of 2023. And if you're listening to the podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, please rate the podcast so it helps us bring more visibility, but also it will help us with getting more guests. In today's episode, we start with episode number 5, Julia Carter, account executive at MarkPipe. Episode number 4, Will Falkenborg, SDR at Edge Insights. Episode number 3, Anand Gopinathan, account executive at Nearman PM. Episode number 2, Holly Allen, account executive at Deal. And episode number 1, Mike Wander, former account executive at Lavender. Let's dive in. Episode number 5 with Julia Carter, account executive at MarkPipe. Julia, she exceeded quota by up to 400% in her SDR onboarding process with zero cold call. In this episode, we talk about how she used visuals in her outreach, how she used automated emails to be relevant and not personalized emails, and how to add value to your prospect. You have your account, you selected your best prospects at those accounts, so what's your process to prospect someone on LinkedIn?
Yes. So on LinkedIn, what I will do is I will connect with them at some point in my sequence. I usually have it like as my second step in the sequence or whatever. So I'll connect with them. And then maybe once a week, twice a week, once every other week, depending on when I have time, I'll go through my connections and see like who accepted my connection that week. And then I'll just kind of pull up everyone's tab and I'll like message them all. And I'll usually do like a total of maybe 3 messages, maybe 4 messages over like a period of time. There's no like secret sauce to the madness, but I try not to be that person who just like connects with someone and like sends them a message, even though I'm like kind of cold pitching them or whatever. Like, you know, I try to let it marinate for like a day or two before. But yeah, so, and then my message, I'll call out like just really straight to the point. Like, I don't like these people who try and like fluff me up, like, how do you feel about this? Like, you know, they're trying to start a conversation with me. I'm like, just tell me you've titled sales in your title. Like, I already know what's going on here. Just like, give it to me. So I'll just be like, hey, saw these ads. I'll screenshot the ads. Like, you want to make them look better, basically. I'm like, here's some examples. Like, let me know if that looks good.
Do you have an example that you can share?
I'll literally just, that's exactly the message. Like, it's literally just, hey, saw these ads. Do you want to make them look more on brand? And I'll send them the ads. And I'm like, sound cool? Like, look, let me know if it's interesting. That's literally the message. But I'll keep like follow up with more examples, like, oh, only asking because I like just saw your ads and I figured they could look cool with like this, and then I'll show them some more photo examples. So yeah, it's nice because it's not like super heavy lift on my end, but it like gets the point across very straightly.
Do you find those ads manually? You go on Facebook, on the library ads of the company?
Yeah. So I can find those, but I know for a lot of people, like, I have a very visual product, so I'm kind of have that as like ammo in my pocket. But I think for people who don't have like visuals, just calling out like any specific context that like you have about that person that they would like resonate with. Because even if I didn't send them the ads, these people would know exactly what I'm talking about. So kind of figuring out that thing that's like, oh, if I send, you know, the SDR manager a thing like, hey, like I saw you guys are hiring for an SDR, you know, or some sort of trigger event that the person receiving it would be like, oh shit, like I know what you're talking about. I think that's important.
It's great when you have a product that you can show in your outreach, because here
it's not like you are just sending something about your product, it's you are sending the ad, and it shows that you've done your research. It's not, even though it's like you say, it's not super personalized, but it's personalized to the account, and you show that you've done your research. When I was at Cheap Peppers, we were selling a product that you can integrate into the demo form of the company. So if the company were running Facebook ads with like a book a demo with us, we were using this, we were taking screenshot of it. Or same, we were using the form on their website, if they have a demo form, taking the screenshots of the demo form and talking about it. Because it's not super personalized on the person, but it's relevant to the company.
Totally. And I think that that's like it, like my opinion on personalization is if it doesn't add to your value prop of like what you're proposing, like just don't do it. Unless there's some legit connection, like there's some you're from the same hometown or something like really niche. But otherwise, just like honestly, if it doesn't add to your case, just like get rid of it. So yeah, any sort of screenshot of like the site or something, I just find that it makes it like more personal without having to like do anything.
No, and you're right on that. And I think, yeah, salespeople in general, they're more receiving well personalization, and they are going to send you, hey, kudos on your outreach, and they're going to reply.
Like, I don't care. Or like people endorsing me for stuff, they're like, I saw you took French in college, and they'll like endorse me for it. I'm like, I don't know who you are. My French is terrible. That's why we're not speaking it together, Elric.
What, you want to do the, that you record the interview in French?
Oh, no. Not? Oh, my God. That would be so bad. You would get no listens.
No, but I think, yeah, it's something I've learned, right? Same with data leaders. It's try to personalize my outreach at the beginning. I stopped doing it. And it's not because it's good or bad, but it's for the same reason that you mentioned, it's I'm not getting the results that I'm expected. The only time I'm personalizing to the person or something, it's when we have a closed-loss opportunity with them to mention what they were talking about 6 months ago, talking about the pain they were trying to solve. That's the only way now where I'm personalizing to the person, because it was really specific.
Yeah, that's a great way to do it. It's like very relevant to their business, how you can actually help them. It's not trying to like, you know, fluff them up with, you know, gassing them up with random facts. It's like, hey, you guys are doing this, like, it could be better.
Episode number 4, Will Falkenborg, SDR at AG Insights. He got 530% of quota with 80 meetings booked in September and fully ramped. In this episode, we talk about how Will structure his cold calls, how to have fun when cold calling, and how to handle objections with analogies. But you also mentioned to me in the prep of this episode that you are getting like from 83% to 120% with multi-thread approach. But now when you started to just focus on cold callings, your results started to 300, 400, 500%. So can you share us what was your process with this transition?
With every like state of change or flux, it only ultimately took me realizing like what I do best at, and then using each other part of my day to support and elevate that process. And so if I'm best at cold calling, I'll have these conversations with someone. If it doesn't get that far, I'll use emailing as a support to that conversation to keep the conversation going there and find a different time to call them back from a different number, right? And the second part of, I guess, growth and development on a sales development team is it's honestly gong. When I was interviewing from the job, I had no clue what gong was. I had no clue what being an SDR was. When they told me that you could listen to people's calls, I thought it was illegal. And so what I just started doing was synthesizing every single person I looked up to of what they found interesting, what they thought was important to bring up on the phone. And I started listening to it every night before bed. I'd fall asleep listening to gong. It's the first thing I listen to in the morning. And so just being able to be a fly on the wall is just how you can actually take everything they did wrong and did right, and then input that into your conversations going forward. And the third thing I would say is it's ultimately just a mindset of how you spend your day. And so not being afraid to fail, trying to fail as many times as possible, and then learning from each failure you do make to stop making those same mistakes. Which is why gong is so great as well, because there's a quote where it's like, wise is the man who learns from his own mistakes, but wiser is a man who learns from the mistakes of others. Gong literally lets you learn from every mistake that every single person in your company has ever made before. And I'd say those are the three driving principles that got me there.
Talking about how that you're observing for listening to it, of course. So when you started at AG Insights, did you have a script already? Or I imagine yes, but what did you do with the recordings? Did you start testing a new approach on your course? Or what was your structure for your co-colleague sessions?
Initially, when we start as an SDR, they give you a script to go by just to start. Because if you're saying the same thing every time, you know what to change, right? And so, but I think every SDR knows a script isn't what's going to book you a demo. So what I noticed and what I started looking for on those Gong calls is the first thing is how people started those calls, looking at their tonality and what they said, but then more importantly, how they said it. And then I noticed that how people said things gave them more time on the phone and let them connect with the prospect for longer and almost at like a deeper level than other SDRs would. Additionally, going into the flow of introducing your product and going after the pain points that they're currently experiencing there, and then how to actually handle objections. I noticed some SDRs will constantly seek to interrupt the prospect and focus on hearing what they're saying rather than listening to what they mean. And so using Gong in that manner to understand like the different intricacies between each element of the script and then being able to hammer down the fundamentals and then eventually get off script and go for a demo booked.
How do you structure a call? What's you mentioned an intro, what's next?
When you actually start having a conversation, like a conversation is a two-way street. And so the way I'll typically use an intro is I'll say like, I will throw a chuckle in there and I'll say like, hey, this is Will from HG Insights. How have you been? It's not just an intro. It's a temperature check, right? Essentially seeing the depth of a pool to see how far you want to dive in, right? And based on that temperature check, I'm not the biggest fan of permission-based openers, but if somebody sounds rushed, they sound anxious, they sound like me, even if they say I'm not having the best day, I'll typically go for a permission-based opener after explaining, you know, hey, like we've been speaking with XYZ team about XYZ. Like, do you have a minute so I can actually explain why I called? And then, you know, if they're having a bad day, you don't want to press the bruise on there. You know, something could be going on. But if they do give you a warm response there, I think they're giving you the slack. You can take that conversation and explaining why you called, dive into some of the pain points you feel, and ultimately understand if it's relevant to them. And so starting with an intro there as the first piece, providing context, and then depending on the temperature, going into a permission-based opener. And third, from there, I'll typically take that into an angle, which I've pre-built off of research I've done on the company and how we support and the persona. I'll typically start that angle with an intro into the pains that we support. And so what I'll say is like, let's say we've been speaking with their EMEA team. It's like the substance of that has primarily been around decreasing some of the lack of visibility into XYZ accounts by doing XYZ, which is the value add of our product. Then I'll take that into, it seems like seems like you might have that covered, or has that been relevant to you at the moment? And then from there, it's kind of just goes into tango from there. Typically, they say, yes, it's important to me. From there, you go to close. If it's not important to them, you're kind of in a little bit of an awkward situation where you're seeking to understand what is important to them and them to actually give you the slack and the time to have that conversation.
Do you have them in the same part of the call, or do you have like you give the context on what you're calling and then you start with your angle, or what's your process with it?
Yeah. And so I feel like if you're on a cold call, you got to tell them why you're calling. Because if they don't understand why you're calling, they're not going to necessarily care about the value you provide. Because then you're just like every other SDR you call them who called them. And so when you're talking about context, there's relevance in two forms for what I've seen. There's groundswell within a company. If you're speaking with their other teams, that's the first piece of relevance. Two, it's because you're working with companies that are relevant to them in their space, could be a competitor or a direct partner on their website. And so after you establish that context, you could typically ask if they've heard of you, your company quite yet, ask if you've heard from your company quite yet, or do the permission-based opener of, do you actually have a minute so I can explain why I called?
To focus now on the angle, you are talking about that's where you had your research. So I imagine using AG Insights, you can find a lot of information, but what's your process, your research process looks like for a prospect?
Without using HG, I'll typically review a company's website. And all of this is dependent on the product you sell, the personas you sell to. We primarily sell to sales, marketing, revenue, leadership, driving some of their go-to-market outcomes. But what I've noticed is that a lot of those initiatives are reflected onto their website. Looking at their website, their 10Ks, their quarterly earnings, even their LinkedIn and Reddit posts. And so what I'll typically do is go through that website and understand how are they portraying themselves to the public, because that's how they want to be viewed relative to their competitors. And so are they saying that they're higher speed? Are they saying that there's gaps with other companies? Do they have a why company page saying the comparisons between them and a competitor? You can then seek to integrate each piece of verbiage that they use in there and put that right into your script. And every time you do that, they'll almost be confused as to how you know what you're saying. I was looking at this one company and they had the word logical 5 times on their homepage. And I was like, what's the deal with logical? And so I just started saying into my angle, I started essentially saying, hey, we can help you stop wasting time on accounts that don't have a logical infrastructure. And then people would be like, yeah, how'd you know that? And so if you go just like that one little extra step of understanding how they view themselves, what they do, the persona itself, then everything you say will resonate a lot more. And instead of just shooting ducks from a mile away, you're shooting them in a pond from 20 feet.
I think what you just mentioned here, it's a really good point. So for those who are listening, I think I've wrote like a few posts about that already, but what you just mentioned here, using the words that your customers or prospects are using, it's so important. Because sometimes, here I'm not talking about the research, but more about, for example, when you talk to a prospect, you are going to use what your marketing team internally give you as a speech saying, hey, when you talk to a VP of marketing, you should say this. But then when you watch a case study, you go to G2, you read the review of VP of marketing, they don't say the same word. It's obviously similar, but they are not using it. But here, what you are doing, you are using their own. And I think that's super smart to do that, because that shows that you are understanding them.
Yeah. No, it's definitely the difference between saying something on the surface versus diving deep.
Episode number 3 with Anand Gopinathan, AE at Nearman PM. On this episode, we talk about how to get an SDR job within 2 weeks without sales experience.
What's your process to find a tech sales job without sales experience?
Yeah, I know this is definitely a topic that I'm interested in talking about. And I know currently with like the economic landscape and stuff, a lot of SDRs are kind of looking for work. So hoping to help out a lot of people here. I have like a step-by-step process, and the whole process is based on replicating what you actually have to do as a BDR to actually get the job as a BDR. So like the beauty of it is it kind of transcends like resume, even sometimes like first round interviews, because you're already proving in the actual play like that you have the qualities to become a BDR. So, this could essentially be used by anyone. I just want to highlight. And you can actually use it for other positions. It doesn't have to be a BDR, just for other sales positions in general. So I guess step one would be taking advantage of Crunchbase. So first things first, you kind of want to look at companies you want to work for. And if it is in SaaS, you're obviously going to find them all on Crunchbase. The really cool thing about Crunchbase is you can actually filter them between how much ARR they're making, what industry they're in, whether they had a Series A, a Series B, how many employees. So if you're looking at joining a startup, you can filter out through like high-flying startups. If you want to be in a slightly larger company that you know has kind of structures in place, you can do that. So step one would definitely be working through Crunchbase and actually compiling a list of companies. So you want to get a good, I would say 60 to 70 companies to start with that you're actually excited about. Number two, I would take advantage of Sales Navigator. So once you have the companies, you want to find the decision maker. So if you're in sales, it's more than likely going to be the VP of sales, the CRO, or if it's a startup, potentially the CEO, because obviously they're going to have full autonomy on that decision. Now, after you've done that, you're going to have email address, phone number of these decision makers. So you're probably going to have around 2 to 3 decision makers for each company. So if you have, let's say, 60 companies, you're now going to have 120 contacts. Next step. This is probably the most important step, which is recording a 50-second video using Vidyard or Loom and essentially highlighting 3 or 4 reasons why you can have an immediate impact on the team. Now, why is this so important? Well, first of all, this just goes beyond a CV. Like, they can actually see how you communicate, how you describe yourself, like the kind of energy that you have, which you just cannot read from a CV. Second of all, as a BDR, you're going to probably have to use these kind of creative prospecting methods anyway to catch attention. And I can tell you not a lot of people are doing it, especially in terms of getting a job. No one is sending a video. I can tell you that from my experience with how people reacted to when I did it, that it's very, very uncommon. So with this video, you want to keep it as short as possible. The idea is to pique interest. You're not actually trying to impress this person and try and get a job. You just want to pique interest and show that you have potentially something to offer and you're trying to get a conversation or a chat. So do your 40-second video. Again, simple introduction. Hi, my name's Anand. I'm a BDR or I'm looking for a BDR role. Here are 4 or 5 reasons why I can have an immediate impact on the team. Boom, 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 boom. Keep it as succinct as possible. I would not recommend going over 40 seconds just because it starts to get a bit long. I know people can get very caught up in the whole video thing and start talking for a while. I wouldn't do that. I would try and keep it short, succinct, and impactful. Now, once you have your video, that's going to be, let's say, your first touch point. So you want to maybe have like 2 to 3 touch points after that, just in case the video, maybe they watch it, they're impressed, but they don't have time. Myself personally, I went for a Venn diagram. That's picked off Justin Michael's prospecting methods. So I just had a simple Venn diagram with a picture of me in the middle, 3 circles, and it said SDR, account executive, and SDR team leader. And I just put different qualities to kind of just show through a visual, look, I can do all these 3 things, and just kind of conveying value. So I would include that visual. That's quite powerful because you don't have to just spend a lot of time explaining, oh, I did this, I did that. Boom, it's a visual, it's processed in a few seconds, and away you go. And then the last touch point I had was just saying thoughts, ? In case they haven't replied, it gets through those 3 touch points. So those are like your 3 main touch points. If you want, you can add a meme as your 4th touch point. I did do that just to kind of generate conversation, but you can get the idea is to get as creative as possible with it. I can tell you most people are not outreaching decision makers. Most people right now as an SDR are kind of putting in online applications, crossing their fingers and just hoping for the best, which I guess worked before. But now because of the economy and stuff, it's like you have to be doing a little bit more. So now that you've got your outreach process and you have your contacts, it's literally, guys, just a case of plugging in 20 prospects each day, that's going to start compounding on itself. And you want to follow up. So you have the phone numbers of these guys. If you're using an outreach software and you can see they're clicking on your video link, they've watched it, you need to ring them straight away. Once you call them, you can say, hey, this is Anand. I just sent you an email. Does the name ring a bell? More likely than not, because not many people are sending videos, they're going to be like, oh yeah, actually, I just got your video. Boom. Perfect time to get feedback. Perfect time to handle any objections. Perfect time to say, look, does it make sense to have a quick conversation and explore and see if there's any value we can bring each other? Those I would say are the main steps. I would say be consistent with this. Like, you want to be treating this as you would prospecting. This is what you're going to have to do as a BDR. Is getting attention from decision makers and trying to close a meeting as soon as possible. So once you've got the meeting, the really cool thing is you're almost kind of halfway there. As long as you don't say anything And if you don't say anything to mess it up, most people are going to be very impressed by this. I can tell you guys, I did this for 2 weeks. I don't have the best qualifications. I don't have the best background. I don't have that much experience in SaaS. But I managed to secure a position, a very competitive position within 2 weeks. And I can tell you guys, I had a very big list of people that wanted to talk to me. And I actually had to tell them when I took this offer, look, I can't, I really appreciate this. And that's a great position to be in, guys. So I would say just go through your sequence. I've given you guys that playbook. Try it out. I would say the video is kind of the foundation. If you can find 3 to 4 key reasons why you can have an impact. Again, you want to make this about them. It's not about you. You obviously want to say in the first line, hey, look, I'm looking for a new BDR role. I saw you guys raised your new Series A, so you're probably looking to expand and drive more pipeline. I made a 30-second, 40-second video for you. Let me know if it's interesting. Boom. That's literally all you need to do for your first email. And then based off the back of that, stick to your sequence and you'll start to see results coming in for sure.
Well, so what I really like about what you mentioned here, it's treat your hiring process like your job as an SDR. And here you really explain all the steps, and that's, yeah, pretty much the same process when you're an SDR. I have some question about what you mentioned. So let's go back to step number one. So you are talking about Crunchbase. So you mentioned, let's start with your list. You use Crunchbase to create your list. So you mentioned the stage, the industry of the company, the size of the company. Is there anything else that you're looking for when you're looking for a company or trying to find any relevant information that you want to use to, I would say, if I qualify the company you want to work for? Or...
Exactly. Yeah. I would say one thing, again, tied into the future. If you're looking for a new role, you obviously, I mean, everyone wants runway, right? We don't want to join a company and then 2-3 months kind of running into financial trouble. And then it's like, okay, yeah, we're going to have to let you go now. So look for companies with financial strength. You can kind of check that out on Crunchbase just by seeing whether their employees have grown or not in the past few months, whether they've maybe let go of a few people. That's going to kind of give you an indicator. Beyond that, obviously there's personal preferences. I know a lot of people like companies that have raised a nice fat Series A or Series B, or maybe you just want to work at a smaller company. Some people prefer the startup vibe. Other people kind of prefer like a mid-market kind of company. So I would say, yeah, a lot of it depends on personal preferences, but I would say the key one is financial strength. You obviously want to be applying for companies that you know have a future going into 2023.
Now that's the financial strength, it's a really good point because, for example, right now I'm working at Chili Piper. We raised money 3 times already at the company. In my previous job, that was a bootstrap company. And when the pandemic happened 2 years ago, we lost 3 customers. And I knew that at this moment, the company is going to struggle because if you are losing 3 big customers, and you don't have any, if you didn't raise any money, it means that we're going to need to cut cost. And what happened, so I started looking for another job, and I find a Chili Piper. And the day I left the company, unfortunately, they fired like 6 persons. And now, obviously, if I'm at Chili Piper, the situation is different, but definitely that's a really good point.
Episode number 2, Holly Allen, former BDR at Deel, and she got promoted to an account executive role in October 2023. She got 260% of target in Q1 and got Rookie of the Quarter and Influencer Award in Q1 also. In this episode, we talk about social selling, using voice notes and videos, and how to use social selling with a different buyer persona that's not sales and marketing leaders, and how to overcome the fear of cold calling. So we were talking about LinkedIn right now, and you don't use a sequence. Could you walk us through into, let's say, you pick a new account and you want to go after this account. So what's your process with this account? Are you starting with looking for the people at the account, but then what do you do to engage with those prospects?
Yeah, great question. So I find new accounts, you know, daily, as I'm sure that we all do. So this could be subscribing to things like the funding letter, so I know which account have got money that they're going to want to come and spend at Deal, hopefully. Then what I'm doing is obviously researching those accounts, you know, is this potentially a fit at all? From there, I'm going to use a tool called Sales Navigator, but you can do this through LinkedIn search, where I'm going to search for my personas in the company. And then typically my kind of first step is just to connect with that person on LinkedIn. So send a connection request. You can build lead lists in Sales Navigator. So that's what I tend to do. A lot of SDRs often say to me, you know, LinkedIn activity is quite hard to track. Because, you know, you have to kind of log it manually to like a CSM, for example. So typically what I do is build a lead list, connect with my prospects, as many as like I can.
Do you send a blank connection request or do you personalize it?
99% of the time I send it blank. Unless there's like a really compelling message, like, you know, hey, Elric, was great to meet you at that event last night. I will always send it blank. I've just found like I've kind of A-B tested it and that's what gets more accepts.
And then you started to talk about the lead list to track your prospects. So do you have one list or do you have different lists or what's your process with this?
So typically I'll make like a new list every week. Or like bi-weekly. I'm not kind of too like process driven with this, but I'll just have a list. And then when prospects accept my connection request, it will notify me in that lead list. So it's a nice, easy way to track. If you don't have Sales Navigator, though, you can also just use normal LinkedIn, go onto your connections, and the most recent ones will show up first. And then as soon as that prospect has connected with me, I'm going to go onto their profile, refer back to the notes I've made about their company. And I'm going to usually go in with a voice note. Voice notes for me work really, really well. And I know for like SDRs at Deal that have started using them, they work really well for them as well. Just in terms of getting a response, often people will say things like, didn't even know you could send a voice note on LinkedIn, or, you know, thanks so much for the unique approach. People normally always comment on it, which is, you know, obviously nice.
Before talking specifically about what you say in the voice note, so you are talking about, you have a note for the account, so you are talking about the funding letter earlier. What are you looking for in an account? What the triggers are you looking for?
If an account has funding, I'm going to want to know like what the growth focus is with that. So in my case, it's pretty simple. It's, you know, are they looking to break into a new region or expand in a certain location? They're things for me that are like make my brain ping and I'm like, okay, I can reach out about that. Also just little things like, you know, things I see on someone's profile. Do they say that they're hiring, for example? That's very kind of relevant to Deal and where we could potentially come in. On their profile, are they talking about topics that are relevant to Deal that, you know, if I talk about global payroll, for example, and I'm prospecting to a CFO, like, are they going to get excited when I use that buzzword in the voice note?
So you have two kind of research. So you have on the accounts and then also on the people you're going after.
Yeah. And I think the people element is super important. You know, I was speaking with one of my AEs today who's smashing it. And I was like, you know, what's your secret? Like, how are you doing so well? He's really new to the company. And he was like, because I just care about people. You know, I'm not trying to pitch the product. I'm not trying to make their company sound special. I'm trying to make that individual feel special. So if you're going to send a voice note to someone and it takes like 20, 30 seconds to go on someone's profile, look at some content they've recently been posting or sharing, engaging with, and just have a bit of an insight into, okay, what does this person care about? What can I say that's going to make them feel really special? Like this voice note, you know, really was made for them and I really want to speak to them.
Do you set a limit for researching your accounts and people at the account? Like, do you have like a do you say, oh, okay, for this account, I will just research them for 10 minutes and then I move to the next one? Or
typically, I would say it probably takes no more than like 3 minutes, really. You know, once you've kind of what I tend to do is do all of my like account research in one go. So I'll go on to like the funding letter, for example. Maybe that's like a half an hour exercise where I'm finding new accounts. I've got like a little spreadsheet up. I'm inputting my notes. Then I'm finding the contacts. And as soon as they accept me on LinkedIn, you know, referring back to that sheet and then going onto their LinkedIn profile, like that should take 2 minutes maximum.
Now you have something about the account or other person you are going after. So you said you send a voice note. So how do you structure it? And if could you give us an example of what you're sending?
Yeah, of course. So I will always go in like super high energy, you know, make them feel really excited when they're pressing play. So, hey, Elric, thanks so much for connecting with me on here. I wanted to drop you this quick voice note as I notice you have an awesome podcast. I actually listened to your episode with whoever and really loved the point about X and Y. So like always kind of going in with something hyper-personalized to make them feel like you've really done your research. And then I will try and bring that back to a conversation about deals. So, you know, on the note of global hiring, I was really curious to know how it currently works with, and then maybe name drop a couple employees that would be like relevant to deal, how this works with having them set up over in Mexico. Not sure if you've heard of Deal before, Elric, but we help companies like yourselves, or we help HR leaders like yourselves with X and Y. Something I've been doing recently is ending the voice note with a phrase like, you're probably going to tell me you've got this all sorted, or you're probably going to tell me this isn't relevant. But if this voice note has intrigued you at all, then let me know, Elric. I'd love to have a chat with you. I always try and keep the voice note between like 30 to 45 seconds, so not too long. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Well, I really like about what you mentioned here. For example, if you give my podcast as an example, and then you are talking about a specific part of the episode, I really like that because it's really specific and you can't fake that, because generally... you have people who are going to reach out because I'm receiving that. So that's why I know that. And they're going to say, hey, I love your podcast. And that's it. And that's, I think that's okay, but it's not specific enough because you can't send that to everyone with a podcast. And so you are not saying why do you, if I did you enjoy about the podcast. And here it's pretty specific. It's going to stand out to your prospect because they say, okay, this person really care about me and they listen to my podcast. And the second thing I saw, it's really like the call to action, the way you are ending your voice note. I think it's in a good way to making fun of sending this voice note and to start the conversation with them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, as you say, it's like being specific. I think a lot of SDRs think that personalization is just a case of saying like, hey, Elric, really loved your last post. And they think like that's enough. But you do have to kind of really go in a little bit deeper, find out your facts. And that doesn't take long, right? It takes like 2 seconds to, you know, with all due respect, I could easily click on one of your podcast episodes, like fast forward to 3 minutes in and just listen to a point for 30 seconds and then reference that in a message. Like it is pretty easy.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm doing that also for my prospects at Castor. And I'm working on some specific podcast where they have the transcript and I'm looking for specific URL into the episode. So it's pretty quick also to help you doing the research on that. I have a question. So you are talking about, for example, that you are asking questions about specific employees. Here also, I think it's a great way also to stand out, because another way to show you've done your research. Because I imagine you are using LinkedIn fast enough to show this. Are you looking for specific location? For example, if you see that the CFO is based in London, and then you see that you have some employees in Mexico or another country, that's what you're looking for? Or?
Exactly. Yeah. So it's, again, a super easy search. You know, you go onto SalesNav, you just filter location, like what, that takes 10 seconds less to like pull up some names. And yeah, it feels very specific to that prospect when you're saying like, I notice you have Elric who's out in Mexico, like that suddenly feels very hyper-personalized and it takes no time at all.
And episode number one with Mike Wander, former content executive at Lavender. Mike booked 87 out of 103 accounts just from cold emails during his first 90 days at Lavender, and is averaging 46% of repair rates with cold emails. How do you create your point of view before reaching out to a company?
Yeah, for sure. So you create a point of view as you're writing the email, but you can't do that without doing your research. So there's a couple of steps that you need to take. And the first and the most important is, I always tell people this, it's my rule of thumb. If you don't know 90% of the companies that are on your list on what they do, who they sell to, and why you're reaching out, your list is too long or you didn't do any research. And if you fall into that bucket, go back to start. Do not go to finish, right? Do not click send on an email. Do not even write the email because you're already putting yourself behind. I work with a tremendous woman called Jen Allen. She is an absolute rock star. And one of her things that she talks about all the time is one of her sales leaders, her favorite sales leader she's ever worked with, would always come into a pipeline review call. And when somebody was really excited about a deal, she would stop them and say, hey, what do they do? Who do they sell to? What can we do to help them? And tell me a little bit about them. If you can't answer those questions, you didn't have a deal. I think it's the same thing, but I think you've gone too far at that point. Like, if you can't answer those questions, you shouldn't even be reaching out to them, right? And so in this time and age where everybody is trying to speed up and look at efficiencies and maximizing things with AI and trying to send as many personalized emails as they can, right? That has ripple effects that a lot of sellers completely neglect and don't think about, right? But one of the biggest ripple effects is you're setting an example before you ever get into their inbox that you only care about your time, not their time, right? And so that's not kind of how you want to start that relationship. And that all rolls up into your POV. When you're creating a POV, you're showcasing that you did your research. You know what they do. You're talking about them, right? And so when you're actually creating that, it's basically a formula. A point of view is essentially your why. And your why equals context plus observation slash insight. And so what we mean by that is when you're looking at a point of view and creating a point of view for a company, you might say something that sounds like this, right? Like it sounds like, hey, Mike, saw you were looking for quality writers in your job description. That's your research, right? That's the content. The insight would be this usual or problem, right? Would be this usually means you are focused on quality over mass outreach. Issue is, it's almost impossible to track and replicate what's working, right? Have you looked into email intelligence before? And then you can say, P.S., it provides you real-time analytics on what's working across the team. But you notice, I never said my company name. I said kind of what we do. I alluded to it, right? My P.S. was more of that. But the entire email was a point of view. The entire email was, I did my research. Here's exactly what I think you have going on. Here's what I think your problem is. And here's maybe what you can look into to help solve it. It's not worth me. At least I gave you something that you can think about, right? Most sellers would write an email that looked something like this. It'd be like, hey, Mike, working with teams focused on quality over quantity with cold email, we've been able to 3X your reply rates by using AI to, which provides real-time coaching for reps and write, you know, as they write. Gives your insights into everything that's working for them and how to coach to it, right? All this yada yada stuff. And then they'd end it with like, we're 30 minutes to chat. What you can see is like the first email, while it's not the most fun email for the seller to write because it has nothing to do with them, right? The second email, definitely more fun. You get to talk all about you. You can write that one really fast. It's like you basically tune out. I couldn't even like finish the flow because it just sounds unnatural for me at this point. But when you're creating your point of view, that's exactly what you need to do. You need to create your point of view by showcasing that you did your research from building your list, right? And using that formula.
That's the post you wrote today, actually, the one you are reading right now?
Probably. I just kind of wrapped
up. Okay. Because I think you post something about those two examples.
I did post the post today about point of view because we knew we were doing this. And so I was like trying to tie it.
You mentioned, here you gave an example of that they're hiring a specific role. So what's your go-to list to do your research? Because you mentioned that to create your point of view, you're doing this when you're writing the email, but you mentioned a job description here. So are you looking for other things?
Yeah. So I always go surface level and then I go deep. So what I mean by that is by surface level, I'm going to look at, okay, here are the general things that I'm looking for when I reach out to a company. I pick out those things. And then I say, okay, they are hiring for SDRs and AEs. They just had a news event that they released. Let's just say they got $100 million in funding. And their tech stack is that they use Sales. I have to pick, based off of those three observations, which one do I want to focus on? Here's the thing. This is the mindset thing, right? Most sellers would say, out of those three things, how can I summarize that into one email? That's the wrong thing that you're focusing on the wrong thing, right? And I'll get into why that is, but what you need to do is pick one, go deep on that, write the problem, write that email about that problem. Interesting statistic from Sam Sales over at, you know, Sam McKenna, Show Me, You Know Me, all that good stuff. They just released 75% of sales reps don't follow up after the first email. 75%. Right? Here's the thing. The average reply rate across the industry is 0-3%. So that's all the shot you're giving it. And you're telling me you're going to automate it. If I'm a top rep or I want to be a top rep, that tells me one, I need to follow up, and two, I need to write my own email. All right. Like I can, it's very easy to stand apart from the crowd. In a world, I always like to say this, in a world full of automation, it is very, very easy for you to be highlighted as being a human. You look at your inbox and you ask your sales leaders to look at their inboxes or anybody to look at their inboxes that's in a leadership. It's disgusting. It's like they get 10, 20 emails a day of people who are just massing in them outreach. To tell you how bad it is, I am in 5 different cadences right now, this moment, right? I delete the email every morning. I mark it as spam, right? From people trying to sell me personalized AI email outreach. They literally didn't even look in my, like, I mean, I work at a personalized AI company. You know what I mean? Like helping people write better sales emails. Why would I purchase a personalized AI outreach? You know what I mean? Like it doesn't make sense. And so it's just like, that's how low the bar is. I always like to bring that up because sellers think that the bar is so high. They read all this content. They see these things on social media and they think that's what everyone's doing. It's not. No one's doing it. That's why the bar is so low, right? Everyone's trying to find shortcuts and hacks and all these other things. But where you actually are going to get benefit is exactly what you tear into on this podcast. The process, the framework, the why behind everything that you do. Because that's how you find success.
And you're right, because I think it's maybe 1% of the, I don't know, when I was working in Shipever, we were checking sometimes his inbox to see how many personalized emails he was receiving. It was maybe 1% of them. The rest was all automation. So
SalesLoft did a study across their entire customer base, and they found that 4 out of every 100 emails were personalized. 4. That's how low the bar is, right? Out of those 4 emails, they got 1,200% more replies than all the other emails that were not automated. And then in Lavender, when we typically ingest a team's data, you'd be surprised, you'd be shocked. I can't tell you how many teams, they think automation's the key, and then they ingest their data and they get less than a 1% reply rate when their manual emails are getting like an 8-9% reply rate. It's like the answer is right in front of your face. But we're so consumed with this number. We're so consumed with reaching out to as many people as possible. It's like we think that everyone is waiting to buy our solution. And that as soon as we reach out to them, they're just waiting for it. No one's waiting. And if they are, they're probably coming inbound, right? Like they're probably coming inbound where you brought up a relevant pain and then they're now looking at it. But remember, not everybody is on the market for your solution. So why are you rushing to get? Because look, I'll tell you right now, one metric that a lot of sales teams are going to be starting to pay attention to over the last year, year and a half that nobody's thought about is the cost of burning all those leads. What's the cost behind sending 400,000 emails a month outside of you just getting locked on Google? I mean, how many domains have you ran? How many people have you just, they see your domain and they attribute that to spam now? Right? It's a massive problem. And I think it's going to be something that a lot of people start to look into.
I know that's a topic we can go really deep on this because I'm really aligned with you on this. So one, from the buying experience, also receiving a really, but the, following the framework you shared, it makes the difference because I remember with a specific company, I sent one email and they booked, and then 2 months later they bought, it was a chili pepper for this one specifically, but basically it was the call outreach was just one email. And because it was really focusing on the problems they were facing, and it worked. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. We'd love to know what was your favorite episode of the year of 2023. So to let me know, you can comment on YouTube, but also you can send me a message on LinkedIn to let me know what was your favorite episode. Thank you so much for the help on the podcast and the support you are giving me. Happy New Year 2024, and I see you on the next episode. If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to leave a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. So for Spotify, to leave a review, what you can do is you can use your phone, then go on the Spotify app, then you go to the SDR Game page, and then at the top of the page, you can leave a review. It's a 5-star review if you enjoyed the episode, obviously. And then if you are listening to this episode on Apple Podcasts, feel free also to leave a review on your app. Thanks for listening, and I see you on the next episode.